The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, tomorrow, the 9th of July, was supposed to be the deadline for agreement between the US and the EU in relation to tariffs. What's actually been decided is to kick the can down the road to the 1st of August. Well, to tell us exactly what's happening, joining us on the line from Brussels is Koen Verhelst, a trade reporter with Politico. And joining me in studio for analysis subsequently will be Professor Ron Davies, lecturer in international economics at UCD. Thank you, Koen, for joining us. Tell us, what is the latest development?
Morning, Ivan. Thanks for having me. It's been quite the night here in Brussels, where last night the European Commission, which takes care of all the trade matters for all the member states, they informed all the ambassadors, all the 27 ambassadors based here in Brussels, that they need to sort of get ready for some kind of deal, because despite this. It is this kicking the can down the road, as you mentioned. The EU will still operate on getting a deal done as soon as possible. I don't expect anything to per se land any sort of agreement today or tomorrow. But the EU kind of has this idea, well, if we have some kind of agreement, why would we wait? Why would we spend another 3 weeks on this if we can hammer it out now and then get some details figured out further down the line?
So does that mean a deal will be agreed by the 1st of August, or is it problematic insofar as that there's a couple of elements to this? First of all, your steel, aluminium and cars at 25%. You have your flash 10% since April. So the status quo will remain. But it seems that Japan and South Korea, he's cut it at 25%. Is it that we're not agreed on the sectors, or is it that we're not agreed on the 10%? Because I've seen reference that he's actually proposing 17% for Europe.
No, there's a lot of percentages flying around, absolutely. And the crux of it is that the 10% on all exports of Europe to the US will probably stay. The EU has said, okay, we can agree with that if you give us some kind of lower tariffs in other sectors, like indeed what you're mentioning, cars or steel. Another sector that has been mentioned in the last couple of days are aircraft or spirits. Of course, these are, especially these last two, are sectors that are quite important for the U.S. economy, for importing those products from the EU, especially when it comes to building Boeings. They use a lot of parts from Europe for that. So there will be a bit of relief probably in that sense. But then, of course, there is no guarantee in any of this, because we're dealing with Donald Trump here. So one of the diplomats here in Brussels told us yesterday was that either you have to accept some asymmetry, so either you have to accept that all your products are facing 10%, or you have to accept some uncertainty where everything can change at the beat of a heart, and you know, some executive order can completely throw the rug from under you.
Is Europe united?
It absolutely is. Yeah, I think there are maybe some small parts on how, like, on the precise approach. You know, some countries are saying, okay, we should retaliate much quicker. We should have our own tariffs on U.S. products. Others are saying, and that's probably Germany, I think also Ireland is in that camp, let's get a deal done, at least in principle, some kind of framework, so we can move along and we can figure out something more long term, while at least the 10% is not going any higher up.
You mentioned there a framework agreement. Like I've seen back in the day with GATT agreements and the WTO, they can take up to 10 years to finalize in terms of their complexity. What's the difference between a framework agreement to someone who's selling, you know, butter, $500 million worth of butter from Ireland into the States? What's the difference between a framework deal and a full agreement?
Well, the problem with all of this, of course, is that there is no actually there is no free trade agreement negotiation going on right now. Any kind of agreement we would get, and if you call it an agreement in principle or if you call it a framework agreement, all these are terms that are flying around. But then in reality, what we will get from the US is actually something that is worse than the status quo 6 months ago. So in the end, it's nothing comparable to what the European Union would normally try to achieve in a free trade agreement, because the US has put these bizarre things on the table that we are now all trying to remove from the table and then tell each other, oh, didn't we do a great job there? So indeed, if you're indeed working in the agricultural sector, in the dairy sector, it's very hard to make plans for an eventuality like this, because normally what you get in an actual free trade deal is that slowly but surely all tariffs will be reduced down to zero over the course of maybe 20 years. And that's very much not up for discussion in this case. It's now all about how do we get through the next couple of weeks without having another 10% added to our products.
All right. Koen Verhelst, a trade reporter with Politico, joining us on the line from Brussels. Thanks for that up to date. Well, as I said, Professor Ron Davies is with us. So basically, what conclusions are you drawing from that?
I don't know what to draw from any of this anymore. It really is the case that every time you think you have a sense of what Trump may or may not do, he just kind of veers off in a direction no one ever expected. So, I do think that there will be a deal. I wouldn't use the word agreement, because to me, agreement is something that both sides agree to. But there will be a deal by the end of the month. What that looks like, I think, is going to be very sketchy, very thin. But it will give Trump the ability to say, look, I made a deal. And that's his brand.
So let's just look at the comparators between the EU. So what he's now done, and he's published letters to this effect, Japan, 25%, I think, across the board. South Korea, the same. Malaysia, the same. Now, a higher tariff for some of these countries, which may have been outsourced countries for, China and so on, trying to get around tariffs. So the higher ones are Cambodia, 36%, Bangladesh, 35%, 40% Laos, Myanmar, and so on. Is there a pattern there?
The pattern is the countries that got the higher end of the tariffs are relatively small in the grand scheme. What they become are examples. They become a threat point in the negotiations. Japan, South Korea are essentially what they were back when he announced the initial plan. So the countries that are actually the big amounts of money, there's not been a lot of shift in. It's these others where there might have been a bit higher tariffs. But again, he's kind of just keeps pushing things down the line. And what he says is a lot like what there was before, which is sort of what we saw when he renegotiated NAFTA back during his first administration. What ended up happening was a lot like the original version of NAFTA. But what he was able to do is say, look, I made this brilliant trade deal.
The deal he did with Keir Starmer and Britain for 10%, surely that set the baseline of what the EU is going to get or not?
I think in large part it does set the baseline for what the EU will get. Where I think the EU is in a slightly different position is in particular with regards to multinationals and where the profits are being declared. The UK is not the same sort of host for FDI from the US that Ireland, for example, is.
So I'm confused about pharma. Pharma is very important to us. We have 54 billion of US exports. And there was some reference that they're going to do a report in the US, which was coming out later in the year. And there's not been a lot of talk about pharma. And it's a real skin in the game for us. What's your assessment of where pharma will end up?
I think that certainly in the short run, there's not going to be a lot of change to pharma. And the reason why is, yes, the US is a major export destination for our pharma industry. It's about 40% of what we send out. But the biggest consumer, the biggest purchaser of what Ireland sends to the US is the US government. And you can slap a tariff on that, and the U.S. government's just going to keep paying it because, you know, it's money in one pocket, money out the other pocket. It's a net zero for them. For other consumers, you know, the U.S. health industry kind of is built on, you know, pay or die. But a lot of people will pay up. So I think the change in actually what people will demand is going to be fairly small. The sort of more medium-term risk could be the relocation of production from Ireland to the U.S. But I think the risk of that is very minor. And the reason why is multinationals don't like risk. And what we have now is just complete uncertainty. And to build the facility is going to take 5, 7, 8 years. I think what firms are going to be much more likely to do is just kind of hold their breath and hope for something better to happen. But even if you wanted to go back to the U.S., what are the really big ways in which you make pharmaceuticals? It's research and development. Where are the top scientists coming from? Everywhere. And U.S. immigration policy is not something that's going to attract people that have options. And the U.S. has gutted the National Institute for Health. They've really affected the way in which research and development is done. Why would you go there when the biggest source of research support is gone?
But in fairness, like we've seen, and different figures put out, somewhere between 7 and 10 trillion of reshoring commitments. If you read what Apple and Pfizer and Roche and all these others have said, they're making a commitment to reshore. It is, some of it's quite significant. I know, and it will take 5 years. It is significant.
So it's a commitment, and we've already seen so many commitments broken time and time again. And
you think
so,
they're being disingenuous?
So some of what they've promised are things that were already in train. So that's certainly a part of it. Some of it is, yeah, we will create X, you know, sometime in the next 10 years. And if the Trump administration falls out of power, if someone else is in place and a lot of these policies reverse themselves, I don't think anyone's going to hold them to account for not following through on a commitment that was made to an administration that itself can't be trusted.
One of the things I saw alluded to was that Europe was up for a zero for zero deal. Just explain what that would look like.
The idea of the zero for a zero deal doesn't make any sense to me. You know, what it's trying to talk about is, you know, trade being...
Well, would it be bourbon for Irish whiskey?
Well, that's exactly the point, is it doesn't make sense to isolate individual industries. You know, for example, yourself, you run a massive trade deficit against Dunn's because you go there and you spend money and they don't give you money back. But, you know, I assume Newstalk pays you a salary and you run a massive trade surplus with them. You can't treat, you know, talking and food as two separate things because they're all intertwined. Half of U.S. imports are intermediate inputs that get used to make other stuff in the U.S. And it's not like they're coming from the same industry. They're coming from all sorts of different industries. You can't separate these things out. That's not how the global economy works now.
All right. Thank you very much for coming into studio. Professor Ron Davies, lecturer in international economics from UCD. The one thing he's sort of saying is...
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.